Good morning. Happy Mother's Day to all of your mothers out there. Nothing says Mother's Day like Pokemon cards on the front quilt. Well, this month we're looking at tradition. And I was realizing as I was reflecting on tradition this week that we often think of tradition as something that is stuck in the past. But I actually think that tradition is a one full motion. That, if you will, we are living out tradition in the gestures of our lives right now. Past, present, future. Here, now, legacy. What does it mean to be a part of a tradition? So this Mother's Day, we will think about all that has nourished our sense of tradition, all that has given our lives a sense of purpose and motion, and think about what legacies we might want to leave behind. So come, let us give thanks for our mothers. Come, let us honor tradition. And come, let us create new ones. And so Hani Panokuk is going to come forward, and I want to invite any children who are out in the chairs who would like to join Hani for the story to come forward. And feel free to bring an adult with you if you want to, if it would make you feel more comfortable. But I promise that Hani does not bite. She's a lovely person, and she has a wonderful story to share with you.
I'm going to talk about a time I was staying in a home with 100 children lived. Actually, more than 100 children lived. And they were in the home of Child Haven in Nepal. And they were in the home because either their parents had died or the parents were so poor or so disabled that they couldn't take care of the children. So there were 100 children who lived like brothers and sisters in this home. And we were living there for 3 months. And I became part of the family, and they called me Honey Didi. And Honey Didi means big sister. So all we lived there like brothers and sisters. They had to share everything. They shared their bedroom with many girls or many boys. They shared the dining floor with all the 100 children. They even shared their clothes. Can you imagine living with 100 brothers and sisters? Quite something. But they were happy. They were very enthusiastic children. They loved to share. But they also wanted to sometimes have a little bit of attention just for themselves or with a small group of people, like we're sitting here, right? So I decided to start a little gardening club with a small group of children. We got some pots, we got some plants, and we went out in the field and filled the plants with soil, went to the top of the roof. Many houses there have flat roofs, so we found a corner, and the children got busy planting the plants, watering the plants, and they loved it so much that they kept taking the plants out, repotting them again, watering them again. And what do you think the plants did? Did you think the plants like it? They died. But you know, the children had lots of fun doing it. Another thing, so I actually learned from that probably sometimes the doing is more fun than the result. So we had a lot of laughs. Another time was in the early morning. Many of the volunteers went jogging in the morning, very early, before breakfast. It was too cold, too dark for me, so I stayed nicely in bed. And then one morning, the door went open, and there was a little girl with a flower. Can I come in, Honey Didi? So she snuggled up in bed with me and felt very special. And so did I, actually. Next morning, in came Gay and 2 more girls. All snuggled in bed. A few more mornings, by the time the 4th or 5th morning came, I had 8 children in bed. And then the director said, Honey Didi, you cannot do that. Because the older children will feel left out. So that was the end of that snuggle time. And then another really neat story was when we arrived, we got this very bare room. The walls were absolutely bare. We had one little cupboard, two hard beds. That was our room for 3 months. But you know, by the time we left, the children, just like you, when you like somebody, you sometimes make a drawing for them, I bet, right? So the children did many drawings we got. And every time we got a drawing, we put it on the wall. And our room got brighter and brighter and happier and happier. So by the time we left, we took all the drawings off. But they had made a lovely room for us. So as you can imagine, after being such a long time with the children, we started to really love them. So when we had to leave, we felt kind of sad. And the children were also sad. But they all gathered around and they said, "Goodbye, honey Didi. Goodbye, Hubadai." So I'm left with this kind of a little bit of a sad feeling, but a feeling of great warmth and love for 100 children. Isn't that kind of story? Can you imagine living with 100 children? What would you do? Share? Anyhow, that was the story of Child Haven. And thank you for being here. Great.
Good morning. It's my pleasure this morning to talk about Child Haven International and Bonnie Cappuccino, who to me is the epitome of a mother, or at age 82, maybe we'd say a grandmother or a great-grandmother. She gave birth to 2 boys. Then she adopted 20 children, and usually those who nobody else wanted. The first children were the children of black American servicemen and Japanese mothers, unwanted in Japan. So just think of these poor Japanese mothers, because of strict culture, having to give up their babies. Then later, Bonnie adopted what are called adoption breakdowns, a very sad title, I think. But she wanted these children. Then 30 years ago, Bonnie and Fred started the first of children's homes in India. And Mel and I visited one in the far south back in 1993. And what a warm welcome and what an inspiring experience. It was not until I retired that Mel and I signed up for 4 months in Nepal. And what a wonderful life-changing experience that was. We loved it so much that we signed up again for another 3 months 2 years later. This church then adopted Child Haven International and the work they are doing in mothering so many homeless children. The highlights of the Nepal home were, first, how happy and healthy all these 100 children were, and how well run that Nepali home was, with money used most carefully. It was run at half the cost of some of the other children's homes in Kathmandu. The children slept on mattresses in dorms, rolled them up in the day. They ate basic vegetarian food, including a cup of soya milk from the soya cow every day. If you don't know what a soya cow is, ask me later. All attended school. The children are willing to share, as you gathered from Honey, much better than our children are. I mean, I was amazed. They appreciated every little bit of attention we gave them. It was so hard to leave. I think we all cried, including my husband. Our role was to share whatever skills we had. Mel did financial reports and taught computers. We both taught English to the staff, including the illiterate staff. That was a challenge. We networked with other NGOs and charities and did as much nurturing, parenting, and coaching as we were able. We were most impressed at the dedication of the Nepali staff and with the other volunteer interns we met. And there's a few here today. I gather Honey and Hugo's son-in-law was a volunteer, Diane McLaren, as well, of course, as anyone else who has volunteered? Anything, several people here. It is indeed one of the best international charities that I know. I am so happy that this congregation adopted it and celebrates its existence every year. That, to me, is a great tradition.
Thank you, Christine.
I invite you now to join me this Mother's Day in a centered moment, a moment of meditation, a moment of prayer, a moment of loving kindness. If you feel so moved, I invite you to open your hands and face your palms up, whether in your lap or in front of you, as a symbol that you are ready to receive this day, open and willing to receive what is, open and willing to let go, perhaps, of old grudges, open and willing to be moved and changed. Spirit of life and love in our hands, we have received gifts. We have received blessings from generations gone by, from grandmothers and mothers, some still living, some long gone, but fondly remembered. Some of us carry a weight in our hands of mothering that was less than ideal. We carry hurts and anger in our hands, and we ask, O Spirit, that you might help us to, when we can and where we can, let some of them go, or perhaps use our hands to reshape those hurts so that we might move forward in healing. All of us in our hands bring to mind this day mothers and mentors, mother figures who loved us and shepherded us when we most needed a loving presence. I invite you now into this space and time to perhaps say aloud the name of someone especially on your heart this day, or to simply hold that person now in the silent sanctuary of your heart. Please name those mother figures now in this moment. For all that has nurtured us, for all the people who have nurtured us, for all the people for whom we lit candles this day, may the flame of life, may the flow of life move through us seamlessly and beautifully, now and always. Blessed be, and amen.
My mother was proud. She was proud of her family of origin, and even prouder of my father's family of origin, with its accomplishments and traditions and all. Truth be told, she was a little bit of a snob. But most of all, she was proud of herself for being a gracious hostess. As a youngster, it was a common event in our house to have the phone ring about 5 o'clock. It would be my father calling from the office. He would have a visiting business person there with him. And doing a fair amount of business traveling himself, he knew the value of a friendly evening in a home, not a hotel. So Dad would say, "I have so-and-so here with me from wherever. Can you put another pea in the pot, Betty?" My mom would say, knowing full well that the guy was sitting right there, "Of course, dear." And no matter what was going on, the answer was always yes. Then we would all rush into action. Mom would abandon the plain but nourishing leftovers she had ready, raid the freezer for 5 portions of something, my brother would be pressed into the vacuuming duty. I'd have to clean the kitchen and set the table with the good silver and the linen napkins. And in a short while, the doorbell would ring. Dad would never bring someone in the back door. He learned that lesson early. As soon as the doorbell rang, Mom would rush upstairs to change into something presentable. This was the 60s, after all. And I would answer the door with my teenage version of gracious. My brother and I benefited from some fascinating dinner conversations with people from all over. Many years later, after my father had been retired for a decade or so, we related this story in front of him with such drama, and he was totally stunned. Mom had never let on how much stress and chaos went on in the interval between the phone call and the doorbell. So, what are the lessons I learned from all of this? Number one, say yes unless there's a really good reason not to, because you'll probably enjoy it. Always keep something in the freezer for impromptu guests. Be prepared for anything. And make sure the living room is always tidy. Keep the clutter out of sight. But there's always a shadow side. Appearances and graciousness are great, but not at the expense of your personal integrity. It is better to be honest and say what's really going on for you. I'm still learning to let my genuine self be seen, the weaker bits as well as the strong, and to ask for help when I need it. And perhaps we should let some of that clutter show some of the time. We'd be more human that way. I wonder what lessons my children are learning from me. I'm sure there's a mix of both positive and negative.
I have two readings to share with you this morning. The first is from an essay entitled Reliquary, Histories Incarnate by Martha Park. In October of 2012, when my grandmother called asking if I wanted to go vote for the president, I drove her across Memphis to a church polling place on Poplar and East Parkway. I watched my grandmother from behind a line duct taped onto the carpet. She leaned on her cane, her spotted hand hovering over the screen. She jabbed the screen a little too hard, casting her second vote for President Obama. I helped her place the "I voted today" sticker above her heart and the pacemaker humming there under her skin. It's in moments like these that I am struck by the sheer scope of my grandmother's life. She was born in Mississippi in 1929, a month before the stock market crashed and the Great Depression began. Eventually, she moved from Tupelo to Memphis, married a World War II veteran 10 years older than her, and gave birth to my father and my aunt. Just before my father's 14th birthday, he broke his nose swinging from a handrail in a grocery store, and my grandparents took him to the hospital in downtown Memphis. While they were there, Martin Luther King Jr. was shot and killed a few blocks away at the Lorraine Motel. There have been times I've thought I could slip my feet in and out of my family's shoes and could imagine history unfolding alive through their stories. Now I have a tendency to push back. I wonder if I'm feeling the wrong things or entering into the wrong stories, or if it's wrong to even try to inhabit someone else's experience. This story allows me a glimpse into history through a narrow lens, placing decision-making squarely on my grandparents, still young parents themselves. This is how history happens. decision by decision, story by story. Second reading is just a few sentences from Alice Walker. To acknowledge our ancestors means we are aware that we did not make ourselves, that the line stretches all the way back, perhaps to God or to gods. We remember them because it is an easy thing to forget, that we are not the first to suffer, rebel, fight, love, and die. The grace with which we embrace life in spite of the pain, the sorrow, is always a measure of what has gone before. Origin stories. If you have ever been in therapy, and even if you haven't, you have likely been told or reminded about just how formative your family of origin was and is on you. Can I get an amen on that? Amen. I sit down with a therapist, I'm like, again? We gonna do this again? Where we start in life, how the first chapters unfold, often plays an outsized role in who we become and how we see the world. Our families of origin have a shaping and creating impact on us, for better and for worse and for neutral. The people we begin our lives with hold a prominent place in our being. Mothers, perhaps most key among them. But this morning, this Mother's Day, I'd like to take the long view, if you will, to see the impact on who we are and who we've become, not just in the person of our mother, but in the broader sweep of family history. In the light of what legacy might mean to us and for us. Every time I read that quotation from Alice Walker, I think of how often we fall into the trap of seeing ourselves as self-made. I love even just that first sentence, that we did not make ourselves. We too often forget that we are the product of generations, of memories and stories, which is why I love Martha Park's story about her grandmother who grew up in Mississippi, where black people were hated, voting for a second time for a black president right after having been right down the street from when Martin Luther King was killed. Our lives are complicated and embedded in so many stories. There are so many people who have loved and wept and struggled and made their way trying to find a path of meaning and purpose that made our lives, our very breathing on any day, possible. We owe them, my friends, more than we can say, more than we can possibly express. And who they were, even those whose names and stories we don't know, has had some sway, some impression leaving on our lives. And too often in this day and age, in this time, I fear we see our lives in a vacuum. We see ourselves as the sole authors of our lives, or as the victim of certain circumstances, rather than as part of a longer arc of human history. In truth, we are culmination, we are work in progress, we are wrestling with fate and mortality, we are all that, all in one and all at once. Culmination, work in progress, wrestler with fate and mortality, all in one, all at once. We search for, it seems to me, metaphors to describe life, to describe a lifetime. And again, I return to two. We are a work of art and we are a story. We get to be creative artists. We get to have a journey through time, through life. And that journey has, yes, a beginning, a middle, and an end. In some ways, you could say that we begin and are given a start that launches and nurtures or stunts and stifles. But whatever our origin story, be it Big Bang or Genesis narrative, the next parts of the trilogy, the middle and the end, are ours to form. What will we make of what we have received? Wherever you are on your life's journey, what do you wish to do with what's left? How will you continue to absorb and or understand what mom or dad or siblings gave you into that narrative of your life, into that tapestry that is you? How will you draw from mom, from family history, from human history, from life on earth to form something of the middle and the end that is a legacy of which you will feel proud and good when you are on your deathbed? What will you leave behind? It seems to me that tradition actually has three pieces to its motion. Tradition is received, then it is lived, and then it is passed on. Too often, as I said at the beginning of the service, we just think of tradition as this thing we received long ago and then it's stuck. It never moves, it never changes, it just is. But I do think it is received, and then lived, and then like forward motion through time and through life, it is passed on. I'm not sure, I've been thinking a lot about this lately, I'm not sure why I have been so obsessed recently with the notion of legacy. Perhaps it's because I have arrived squarely in middle age. Perhaps it's because of the deaths of young parents and spouses and friends. Perhaps it's because every time I do my work in ministry, I come across stories of loss, not just at what should have been the end of life, but in the middle. But for whatever the reason, I'm interested in legacy these days. I see how a family celebration like Mother's Day can be an opportunity to reflect on such things. What kind of a mother did you have? What were the gifts and the shortcomings of the mothering you experienced and received? What is the legacy that it has left on your life? What about you as a mother, those of you who are mothers, or a parent, for those of you who are parents? What are the gifts that you are offering, and what shortcomings have there been in your parenting? Or if you are not a parent, what about the legacy of you as sibling or friend or spouse? What are the gifts and the shortcomings of what you have offered? What stories or essays would be written about you? The most moving stories of legacy that I have heard recently come from a surgeon reflecting on life's last chapter, and the daughter of a Vietnamese boat person thanking her mother. In his profoundly moving and timely book, it should be at the top of everyone's reading list, Being Mortal, by Atul Gawande. He speaks of how poorly we have done at helping people live the final chapter of life well. And he speaks about that final chapter, living that final chapter well, whenever that chapter may occur. Right? We don't always get to write that script the way we want to, do we? It is a book about assisted living and nursing homes and modern medicine, but it is about so much more than that. In his epilogue, he writes, "If to be human is to be limited, then the role of the caring professions and institutions ought to be aiding people in their struggle with those limits. Sometimes we can offer a cure, sometimes only a salve, sometimes not even that. But whatever we can offer, our interventions and the risks and sacrifices they entail are justified only if they serve the larger aims of a person's life. When we forget that," he says, "the suffering we inflict can be barbaric. When we remember it, the good we can do can be breathtaking. I never expected that among the most meaningful experiences I'd have as a doctor, and really as a human being, would come from helping others deal with what medicine cannot do as well as what it can." End quote. I read Gawande's words and I thought about my caring institution. If we are to be one of the caring institutions of which he speaks, then we will have to help create traditions and rituals around what it means to be human, to have limitations that we cannot transcend, like mortality, and those limitations that we can and must transcend, like pettiness and greed and fear. What is a church for if not to be a place where we can explore the predicaments of being alive, having to die, and everything in between? We should be a place where we try to create and enliven traditions that value the difference that each life can make and that values all lives equally. I confess, as I draw toward a close here, that I have tired a bit of traditional Mother's Day exaltations, simply singing mom's praises. Not because they don't deserve it. Moms are often unsung in the amount of work they do and the amount of emotional heavy lifting they bear in families. Can I get an amen for that? But what I have wanted, what I've really longed for in Mother's Day that it's never really given me is more than sappy sentimentality. A more bedrock acknowledgement of how foundational mothers can be. And I had a taste of that deeper appreciation and love when I was single parenting for a week on my own and a stomach bug ravaged our entire threesome that was left at home. I suddenly realized one of those days when I was in bed feeling lousy just how hard it must have been for my mom to be a single parent. It had never occurred to me that she would have gotten sick. This larger Mother's Day vision was brought home to me when I was crying as I read this beautiful, beautiful essay entitled "The Fruits of Your Suffering, A Letter to My Refugee Mom" by Adrienne Min Chau Lee. She writes of her mother's harrowing, and I do mean harrowing, journey to freedom, witnessing violence, enduring hunger, carrying her 3-year-old daughter to safety as she fled Vietnam at the age of 26. At the end of her letter to her mother, Adrienne writes, "I'm 24 years old now, just about as old as you were when you left Vietnam with my big sister in your arms. From the moment I entered this world as your second baby girl, I have never wanted for anything. Heaven willing, I will never know the hunger and desperation that defined your 20s. It's amazing how much can change in a generation. You have never hesitated to tell me how proud you are of me. And yet, with all the privileges I have as a healthy young woman with a Yale degree, nothing I can accomplish can compare to what you've done." I want to read that again because it made me weep the first time. "Nothing I can accomplish can compare to what you've done. You transformed your suffering so that I never felt it, never saw it hidden deep inside the wellspring of your love until I was old enough to be curious and started digging. I know you don't want me to, but I cry for you when I think about your past. It makes me want to do everything for you, and I do. You have always told me that my blood is your blood, that my bones are your bones. I am you and you are me. Your past is mine, the present is ours, and my future is yours. Everything I do in this life is for you, Mom. I hope you feel that." What an amazing vision of tradition. The blood of life, my blood is your blood, she says. My bones are your bones. I am you and you are me. Your past is mine. The present is ours. And my future is yours. The blood of life. How we become and how we carry along with us that blood of life matters profoundly. Make no mistake, we carry a stream of tradition, a stream of life and love and loss. We are a nexus. Traditions meet in us, past, present, and future. May we make those traditions live, and may we make our moms proud. May we carry in our bones all that could be when all people are free. So may it be. And amen. Grass and clouds had fullest wealth of awe. My mother's voice gave meaning to the stars. What a world. What a life. What traditions we hold in our very beings. May we honor those traditions. May we see that each of us has a voice that could give meaning to the stars, now and always. Blessed be.